Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
I'm Derek Riley. I'm with Charlie Smith, and welcome to Dirty Water. An hour of swinging discourse where opinion is everything and where facts are really yanked out of our kimonos. Today's guest on Dirty Water is the King Jesus of wave pools. He got his surf chops threading caves at Big Rock in La Jolla, San Diego, and has spent the last 35 years trying to recreate similar thrills at the punch of a button. In 1987, our guest sold his share in a bunch of theme parks he developed and invented a standing wave that ended up being installed in over 200 joints in 35 countries. In 1999, the Swiss watch company Swatch toured his standing wave, which is called Bruticus Maximus, and that caused more permanent injuries in 1 year than Chopu in the last 30 around the world. From Florence to Munich, Vienna, Hanover, Long Beach, San Diego, Manila, and Sydney, with Tony Hawk, Kelly Slater, and Terry A. Harkinson wowing crowds with a surf, snow, skate combo of airs and tubes. Our guest's real goal, however, was a wave that didn't involve standing waves and finless mini boards. As computer tech got better, he deepened his research on the different ways of making waves. Hydraulics, plows, boats. He ended up using pneumatics, which is pretty much wind power, to birth his newest invention called WaveLock, and being used right now as the tech behind the Palm Springs Surf Club, currently in the proof of concept phase and only half the size of his proposed build. He's a good-looking man, soft-spoken and hard-working. He told his mama that all the girls loved him because he looked like Robert Duvall, only skinny and with muscles. He's a big man, long and lanky, with white hands marked with scars. He is Mr. Thomas J. Lochtefeld.
Good.
Thank you.
Are you currently cooking in North County, San Diego, Tom?
Cooking. It's nice out. I was out surfing.
How perfect is it?
Yeah, this is great.
We just got to move to Hawaii, is what we did. Hawaii was slightly chilly water.
I know. I was out in my booties because my feet all got messed up. So anyway.
Were you surfing ocean waves, Tom?
What's that again?
Were you surfing ocean waves?
Oh yeah. Oh, I got to. Absolutely got to.
You don't have a flow rider in your backyard?
No, not anymore.
Did you at one point?
Well, I had, you know, down at in Mission Beach, you know, that was basically my private little wave there for years, and then I sold it, so that was fun.
That was pretty recent though, when you sold your flow rider biz to someone, huh?
Yeah, I sold the flow rider business to Whitewater, which is this big water park firm. They were one of my licensees for the flow rider, and then I had this other business, Wave House, where, you know, it was bar, restaurant, all that. And it had the wave in it. That's where I would ride, you know, on the sheet waves. But now we're focusing on the real stuff, the juice.
The juice is here. The juice is happening in Palm Springs.
That's it. That's step one.
real quick, at the Wave House, what was your cocktail to wave ratio?
You know, back then I did drink a lot. I kind of, I've ebbed in my alcoholic consumption. There's just the downside. The next morning is just too much. Can't handle it. Anyway, that's part of the process, right? So
that's part of the damn process.
It was very intellectual, at least stimulating. It always.
I think one of the best things about the flow riders, and I remember riding it in when I lived in France, but we happened to be in Munich, and it was 1999 when the Swatch Tour was happening, yeah. And it was surfing and drinking as a sport. because everyone would drink. All the pros would be drinking. You'd be drunk, and the drunker you got, the better you rode that dang thing.
Oh man, I remember two Australian guys. Oh, let me think. The Yui guys, right?
The Mad Huis.
Yeah, who were the? They were top. They won. Like I'm spacing out on their names.
The Harringtons?
No, it was
Darringtons.
They were on the tour.
Josh? No, not Josh.
Oh God, it'll come to me. Just let me.
Josh is just a slightly crazy hooey, not a mad hooey.
But I could not believe how much these guys would drink. These Australian pros, man, insane. They would stay up all night, party, come in the next day, surf. You know, oh God, incredible.
Was that the San Diego White House?
No, that was in, that was when we were in Munich.
Oh, right.
And then those same guys, we kind of took the whole entourage, you know, went Munich, Hanover, and then went over to, it was in Philippines, in Manila, went to, in Italy at the Piazza di Michelangelo. That was pretty good. Huh?
In Florence. Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, in Florence.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, you talk about a party, man. That thing was, it was just nonstop.
And the wipeouts were better than Chopu.
Oh, God.
I think more people have been injured on the flow rider than they have at Chopu in 30 years.
You know, one time it was Mark Opelucco came over and we were in San Diego. And I said, look, guys, it was him and Luke Ego. I said, guys, it's low tide. You know, you got to be careful when you come off because it went into the pit, you know, and then you get swirled around and you had to grab onto the rope. Anyway, Aki had just won the championship, right? This was what, in
99?
Yeah, right after, in 99, I think, right? And so, sure enough, he comes off, jams his ankle right before the trestles event. So what do I do, right? Of course, I'm sitting here with all the millions of dollars. And I go out. He's in his car. His foot's elevated. And I say, hey, Aki, do you mind signing the release of liability?
And what did he say? Oh, Tom, I'm really sorry, but I can't sign that. Bill and I might have my ass.
No, he went ahead and signed it just like that. It's classic Aki. Couldn't believe it.
Oh, what a legend. Yeah.
I mean, that is legendary behavior right now. To sign a liability release after the fact is yeah, hats off. Now Aki is my favorite surfer.
Yeah, gentleman, just a classic gentleman. Yeah.
I think it's pretty hard for people to understand now just how big the flow rider was in the mid-90s and late 90s, when you had Terry Hutchinson and Tony Hawk and Billy Bryan and Kelly. Yeah. Riding, I think it was such a big deal at the time, huh?
Yeah, Bruce Irons and who? There was a whole litany of guys that would come through, you know. And it was, I think, part of it was the parties were so great. I mean, they were. And then the other thing, it was difficult, so they all were on equal footing, and it was such a show. I mean, when we did the one in Vienna, we had in 4 days, we had over 1.5 million people came through and saw this thing. It was insane. You know, it was classic. So
the numbers the WSL can only dream about, huh?
My goodness. Like, yeah. Why worry on waves anymore? Let's just redo the Flow Rider. I'm in.
You know what else was kind of interesting? The guys who could ride and versus who couldn't ride. There, you know, like Bruce Irons, the second he got there, he just was instantly on, just carved and slapped. Same with Terrier, right? But then, like, the older school guys, let's say like Tom Curran, no, he couldn't get it, could not get it. And like Lopez and a lot of the other guys, because they just weren't the aerial, you know, kind of like either foot direction. They were really tracked, and you can't be that way. So it was very entertaining.
It's ironic now that Tom Curran actually rides a flow rider surfboard in the surf. That's one.
I know, isn't that is amazing? Amazing.
I mean, Tom Curran rides waves like he's riding a flow rider at this point.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the other thing is a lot of you know how the transition over the past probably 20 years is really in surfing has been a lot of the slabs and slab type waves, because the way that shelf is and the wave hits, you know, and that water's just sucking out back over, coming right at you. It really is like a flow rider, you know? So there are certain analogies, and it did definitely tweak a few. I like smacked and broke my collarbone here. So it was a good little test, you know, although what I did learn, because as a surfer, when I first did it, the whole reason why I did the Flowbird or Wave House was so that I could build a place for the flow barrel, because that thing was a total economic loser. So I had to figure out, well, how do I make it viable? So I said, okay, I'm gonna put the restaurant, retail. And in doing that, though, I figured out kind of that the business side of that. But what you do is you'd have this opportunity to create these, the food and beverage sales would go up like 25-30% when you flipped it on. But it was a little bit dangerous. And so, but surfing, you know, it's kind of like, well, figure it out, you guys. You know, that's your problem, not mine. So, and as long as but being an attorney, of course, I had him sign all waivers and disclosure. So,
yeah, it's amazing. You've got a couple of degrees. You've got a Bachelor of Science with a side fucking track in neurophysiology, and I think, and you've got your, law degree with in taxation.
Yeah, that was because I was really good at tax stuff. And because
what makes someone good at tax stuff?
You got to be how do you get around things? You read the words and then you figure out, well, they said this way, you could go this way, this way, you know, that's a trick. So, you know, I was good. I'm good at that. That's what I do. Well, not anymore, but. I could.
How did a tax lawyer come up with the standing wave, the sheet wave, and then, you know, and now the wave lock?
Well, it starts out the lawyer thing. The whole reason I became an attorney was because I couldn't write. I was actually better at math science. That's where I went to Revell College, you know, and I was at UCSD. So, but because I couldn't write, I figured, well, I better go the opposite direction and do something that I can't do so I could kind of figure it out. So that's why and then when I went to the other thing, I was got into philosophy and reading like a lot of, you know, phenomenology, Merleau-Ponty or Wittgenstein or, you know, Heidegger. I mean, all these wacko. Oh,
were you a Heidegger fan?
I was, you know.
Boozy Bagger?
I mean, and that's, and be honest, that's why I like Beach Grip. Because I know how smart you guys are. I know there's a lot of your readers that the comments that you see, oh man, that peanut gallery, oh man, it's heavy. And the thing is, you know, you're sitting here going, God, man, there are smart people out there, and they're so much faster than I am. I could never go that quick. And they're, well, they do. And you guys see it all the time, I'm sure, you know?
I mean, our commentariat puts me to shame every single day. Like, yeah, they're a smart, weird bunch of people.
But I got a question for you, both of you guys. Okay, you guys write up, you come up with an idea, right? You write it up. How many times do you go back and edit your piece, you know, and kind of tune it and polish it and chop do this, you know? You
Derek?
Well, we have a policy where if we fuck up, we don't correct it in the text. But, and so, because quite often people will pick it up in the comment, they'll pick it up within about 30 seconds if there's a grammatical error or if there's a factual error. So in that case, it would be pretty poor form of us if we corrected it and made the commenter look stupid. So we always leave that in there. But quite often I'll go back and say, fuck, that sentence was a little bit rough, and I'll tidy it up and tidy it up and tidy it up. And sometimes pretty rarely because Chaz has got a better sense of the technical aspect of writing than me. But sometimes I go in and chuck in a couple of paragraph breaks and full stops for Chaz. But factual or grammatical things we fuck up that someone has noticed. But if no one's noticed it, sometimes I go in and fix it.
I just got really a very funny email from a reader who actually was listening to the podcast talking when we were talking about Waco. It was the what's his name podcast? Who's the
Shane Magnuson. You're,
yeah.
Oh, Shane.
Magnuson. You're that podcast. Yeah. And we were talking about Waco, the deaths in Waco. And I threw out that it was 163, just totally straight faced and kept going with it. And he said, I looked it up and it was 74. And you're 163 as totally factual without pausing made me laugh so hard. So,
I think it was actually 70. Wrong. I think it was 76 if you include David Koresh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I
checked it after our podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But how many white Christians were incinerated by the police?
But I was 163 straight face.
163 is pretty good.
Really thinking that was true. So, yeah.
That's
the beauty of Beach Grit. It's always thinking you're true.
No, I tell you, Beach Grit is the masters of tongue in cheek. You know, you and Sir Walter Scott, man.
So, Tom, tell us how you transitioned from being a tax lawyer to first you went to theme parks, didn't you? Water parks.
Yeah, first, the most important thing, I grew up surfing, you know, in San Diego, La Jolla. And part of it was because I love to build things, although I'm no good with my hands. I kind of like figured out conceptually how to use my brain to do it, you know, and then I could hire people that were better than me. So I started out, I started buying when I was in school, right? At USC, I started buying property, real estate, apartment buildings and hotels. And I'd sweet talk this banker into giving me a $90,000 90-day note. So what I'd do is I'd go use the $90,000, I'd put it down on a piece. This was back in the 70s, so you got to realize properties were a lot cheaper. You know? So
that's a ton of money for the 70s.
And I was like, bam, put down and I'd flip it. And then I'd go and do another one, I'd flip it. So I'd make it so much more money than I was actually doing in taxes. So I figured, okay, I'm going to start into real estate. But then these real estate brokers were so dumb, I just couldn't handle it. So I had to get out of that. And there was a guy who was a developer who had done Seaport Village in San Diego, which is these marina villages. So I basically partnered up with him. And then what happened in, I think that was in 1980, the market, the interest rates went just through the roof. It went up to like 21%, you know, it was just so wacko. That was, cause they were trying to stamp out inflation. So what I did then is he brought in this steel partner and we said, oh, we're going to go build a water park, you know, cause the only water parks that existed at the time were Wet and Wild in Florida. And so we bid on this county land in LA, and that's where we did Raging Waters. And then I kind of had started the whole thing up, and you know, no one knew what they were doing. So I had huge latitude. I'd sit out there and spray paint can, put it on this ground. Okay, there's the river, you know, and then make the children's area and do this over there. So that's where I started with the whole intent. I kid you not, my whole purpose was I wanted to surf the wave pool. I wanted to make this wave pool. So, and then, but there was such a piece of shit when it was done that I, you know, promised myself I was gonna like, okay, I gotta figure this surf thing out, you know, because what am I doing here if it's, you know, my goal is I wanna be surfing. So it took 3 years. I went ahead and ended up selling out to Paramount, sold that whole deal out, the Raging Waters deals. And then I had money. And so for 3 years, I didn't work. And all I did is say, okay, what am I going to do? I said, you got this window of opportunity. So I said, I'm going to design, because I knew then the water park world. And to me, that was the only window of economic viability to be able to create a product that you could sell. So that's how Flow Rider came about. So that's where I invented the whole Flow Rider. Was just, I thought through the entire process, said, you know, it's got to be, you know, relatively small, low, you know, relatively low energy. You know, you got to go, you go down all the costs, operating costs, capital costs, you know, safety, all those things. You just keep shaping the thing. You're constantly shaping it as you go. So that's where the Flow Rider came up. And then I invented other stuff too that I licensed out, like these uphill water slides, Master Blaster, and all this stuff. So with that, that's when I also did the Flow Rider for about 20 years, because the problem was you couldn't do real waves very well. And the reason was there wasn't the computer horsepower. We didn't have, the cost was too high. And I knew I had to get into the actual modeling, and we use the hydrodynamic right now. Man, I got these guys that are just insane. You know, they run all the, because you solve for these Stokes-Navier equations, which are just kind of disorder, well, they're fluid flow stuff. But what you're trying to do, in essence, is you come up with the way we approach it is you make these particles. It's like you're dealing with water molecules, right? In a basin, you define the basin, and then you just go, bam, and set it off. Oh, that brings me another. I want to go back to one point, because Derek, I sent you that one article. It was on that MIT deal with the wave patterns from, you know, when someone becomes, you know, you have a sperm and an egg, and the egg hits the sperm and it sends out waves. Do you get that?
When you send me anything that says sperm and eggs, and I just start losing my mind. And it's funny because you say that, and I look behind you, and it looks like a giant dildo with a red ball on it. What the fuck is that? You're a bad motherfucker. You're a rich, crazy wave making motherfucker with a fucking giant dildo with a red ball. So when you send me sperm and egg shit, I just go, woo. Give it some my sperm.
But I mean, you got to admit, that was classic. You know, you have the way that the egg, the, you know, and that it transmits its information to build and subdivide, you know, start making more cells, is through wave patterns. And the same wave patterns, I mean, I constantly see this stuff, you know, in the nature. I mean, that's how you gotta jump from thing to thing to thing, and it just all relates. And everything deals with waves and patterns. So coming back to what I was talking about, you create a dissonance, you create a disturbance inside a pool of water, and we could tell wherever it's going to go, you know, whatever it's going to do. So that way we can shape the perfect wave, whatever you want, we can do, you know, we will absolutely get there. You're going to be able to program from your desktop or your phone, whatever wave you want. I would say it's probably 10 years off, you know?
So wait, two questions real quick here. First, is the Palm Springs pool going to have like a crazy sexual theme in terms of, I mean, you should have sperm hitting egg as the...
as the logo, huh?
As the logo. And then the entire thing, you don't get a key when you show up, right? You get to reach into a basket of keys. There's two in there, right?
Yeah.
You end up in a room with at the end of your surf session with whoever grabbed the other key, et cetera, et cetera. Palm Springs, for pity's sake. It's an oasis of free love.
Who do you want to get, Shane or Kalani?
Yeah.
You guys got to promise me.
Two tight old horse. Jesus.
You got to promise. You got to at least put the link to that MIT article so your readers don't think I'm a total bullshitter, you know. There's some substance.
But Tom, where did the inspiration come from the standing wave? Was that had you been watching rivers, or was it just something that came to you in a dream?
It was actually a dream, but it was logical reductionism. You know, so it just you just shrink it down to the bare bones, the minimum. You know what I mean? How do you make the thing as tight as can be? Well, you can't make a real wave. You got to make a fake wave, you know? So, and, but it was, and it's such a blast. It is a blast. It's a lot of fun. So anyway.
Do you remember the response? I remember I was, one of my first jobs, I was working at a bodyboard magazine called Riptide, and the Schlitterbahn came online, and it was the standing wave, and those bodyboarders getting, you know, 40-second tubes, whatever. And it was the greatest thing anyone had ever seen. But it didn't really permeate the surfing world at the time because it was purely bodyboarding. But within that community, it was groundbreaking. It was kind of like surfacing Kelly's pool for the first time.
Well, in the same way with the bodyboarders were first at Chopu. You know, the bodyboarders pioneered so many things ahead of the surf community, you know. But yeah, that was like Pat Caldwell and Stuart, Mike Stewart was there. And Jay Reel, and there was a number of other guys that were there, all the top bodyboarders, such good guys. So
it's ironic, Texas becomes the pioneer of wave parks. You know, now it's BSR, and BSR changed that whole thing, changed surfing more, far more than Kelly's pool, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did Kelly and WSL come to you? And I mean, what's the relationship there? Or is it two ships in the night?
No. I have a really good relationship with Kelly. He and I, this goes back to 2000, because I was going to build the tech for him, where he wanted to go. But then I think it got caught up in the business side of thing, and it just didn't work out, you know. And I think they would have been better had they gone with me, you know, because they didn't.
I don't think that
they didn't want to pay the what, because I knew what it was going to cost to do all the modeling, yeah. I knew what it was going to cost. They didn't have a clue. But anyway, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes, you know. But no, go ahead.
Do you feel in this arms race though? Because now we're in a proper, I mean, imagine from flow rider to a full on wave pool arms race with different techs. And so it's properly like we have the Soviet Union. Who's the Soviet Union?
Is it? Oh, that's Whitewater. That's a new one. Yeah. You guys haven't seen them yet.
That's the endless wave, isn't it?
They're the dark star. Yeah.
Talk to me about Whitewater, because didn't they get the Paris contract with their endless wave tech?
Yes. Yes.
Is that a version of something that you sold them?
No, it's actually a copy of American Wave Machine.
Ah, so that's pneumatics as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
That feels more like China to me than Soviet Union, to be honest.
They hired the engineer, the previous engineer from American Wave, Clement.
Wow. And they just created their own sort of version of it.
Yeah, and it's going to be full on litigation. You got to do an interview with Bruce again and ask him about it. See if Bruce will get any detail. No, he'll never would, because it's litigation, right? Everyone clams up.
But Bruce used to work for you before he started American Wave Machines, though. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So was he taking that the whole time, or was he a genius?
He worked 8 years roughly for me. He's a good guy. I really like Bruce.
And the American Wave Machines, to me, seems one of the best techs because, you know, BSR, for me, is the most attractive of all the wave technologies. Can you go through, you know, American Wave Machines, Kelly and Wave Garden and yours, and just explain the differences and what works and what doesn't?
Yeah. Okay. Waves.
You're thinking sex again, Tommy.
Yeah,
you just caught a reflection of your giant dildo. I just saw it again. Jesus Christ! It takes a lot of experience to enjoy that thing. So,
waves are in traditional, call it what I say, traditional in the right word. In the ocean, let's use that as the paradigm because that's the best, you know, vehicle. It's a disturbance. You got a wind. You got wind, or you can have a tsunami. One or the other, right? So, but let's take the typical one: wind. So you're getting the surface disturbance. That's going to cause the friction, which you know there's a whole process that goes through. It ends up making the waves that most surfers totally understand, right? So what we do is, from a call it a surf pool perspective, for the most part, with, when you're dealing with wave manufacturers, and this would be Wave Garden or American Wave or Surflock, not Slater, that's a different one, or the, call it Wave Garden numeral uno. What happens is, call it typical wave formation, you make a disturbance. If you're going to go ahead and from the way I look at it, you're going to make that wave, you got to cut out the whole fetch, which is thousands of miles, right? So what you do is you do reduction again, and you get right to the point, and we create the wave right before it breaks. That's what we do. And there's a certain stroke, so to speak, that translates into that water motion that results in the wave, but it's extremely precise. Now, there's ways you can make it simpler, which is what American Wave Machines does, and it's very, very simple. And they, with the way they organize their reef and the wave, when the wave comes out, they just progressively synchronize their caisson firing, you know, as it goes along, and that results in their wave. It's almost like it instantly comes out and hits the reef and breaks. We don't do that. We actually replicate the ocean wave, and we can have it break anywhere we want in any part of the pool. That's a lot harder, okay? The math is much more complex. Okay, then on the flip side, with Slater, what you have is they're a plow. You just got this big plow, and that plow goes to the water, and it just slices off the water, and you get a supercritical stream flow that just forms into the shape of a wave. And it's just how you slice the water that creates that wave. The downside of what Slater's doing, which everyone, you know, familiar, is number one, there's the huge mass transport. You get all that white water going into shore. And then secondly, that ends up being just such a massive disturbance that it takes 4 minutes, you know, or whatever their current one, maybe it's down to two now, for the water to get calm enough, because the currents are so significant. And similar is the Murphy's Wave. I think you guys seen that one, or even Whitewater originally did. There's a twisted history there, but the one in Typhoon Lagoon or the one in Al Ain, those, what they do is they lift up a big chunk of water and then they drop it. But that's the same kind as a tsunami, because what happens is that water just lays on top, and the thing is, if you look closely at Slater's video, for example, his very first one, and towards the three-minute mark or something like that, there was a photographer sitting in the water and Slater was coming right toward him. That, you can see there's absolutely zero water motion at the photographer. And he's in a wave in the beach, that water would be sucking back out as the wave approaches. So that's why there's no bottom, so to speak, and this is what I think the big fight, if you recall, that Weber was having with Slater about no trough to the wave in Slater's wave. That's true. There's no trough. And that results in and with the water coming at you because it's sliced off of his plow, it's a weirder, I didn't surf Kelly's wave, but I made my own waves like that. Probably me and another guy, Chuck Sauerberg, we did that like 30 years ago, you know, and then we did this whole series, and I even surfed my own. I built inside the plunge building at in San Diego, a wave house. And it's okay, you know. I mean, we could surf it. It was fun, but there's so many drawbacks. I mean, I probably spent $1 million doing that, and I threw it out because I knew in the end of the day, nah, it was a loser, you know? So, which is going to happen anyway. Well, so anyway, to get back to your ultimate question, where this thing's going with all these different techs and who's going to prevail, I do not
sure. know. But there's going to be losers, right? It's absolutely. Not like, oh, we have Point Breaks and we have, beach breaks, like everything's fun, right? In this world, things are going to fail.
Absolutely. And yeah. And that one, the one in Yaphoon.
Yeah.
I don't have to say anything.
Say something. I'm very interested for a man like yourself who spent the last 35 years more, I guess, developing whirlpools. What do you think of the giant plunger?
It was so classic. I couldn't. Unbelievable that they could raise that money and do that. I mean, my hat's off to them, man. They are salesmen, salesmen to the ultimate degree, you know? So that in and of itself is worthy. It is so worthy, you know? Now, will it be successful? No.
Why not?
Oh, the capital.
They have five waves. They have five whole waves.
Here, I'll tell you why. There's a whole bunch of reasons. One, number one, capital costs. Nah, that's just absurd. Two, the size. Think about it. You can't build a pool like that. I mean, the liner, because you still need reefs, right? You got to shape this stuff. All that, what are you going to do? You pour that out of concrete, you know how much that's going to cost? The liner thing, forget it. You saw what happened there, liner. It just blew up in a heartbeat. You know, it's never going to stay. Never. Liners are absolute losers. So in this context, you know.
Why do you have to have liners? I was curious. When Shane was talking about the liner blowing up at Waco, I was thinking, why not rip the liner out? Like, isn't the bottom contoured already? Is there something extra the liner's adding besides safety?
The primary reason for the liner is waterproofing. Because if you did it over dirt, you talk about how bad. The thing is, the very first time I saw that Waco pool, I said, someone's going to die. I guarantee you. Matter of fact, I even called Shane. I told him, I said, Shane, someone's going to die. You know? I mean, they haven't.
Not from eating amoebas.
No.
For some other reason.
I didn't think of that. But there was that other guy that died, drowned, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Because what, though? Because it was, I mean, back to the liner, what?
How
can it be not like a swimming pool? A swimming pool doesn't have a liner.
Some do. They do build some that way, but those are the cheap pools. I mean, the reason they build and use liners is because they're dirt cheap. The what happens in the physics of liners and waves, you got the dirt underneath. You put the liner and then you got the wave here, right? Then what happens is when you got wave, you got, you know, this trough and followed by a crest. Well, then that pressure, you got this moving pressure field that's moving through the pool, right? And a cubic foot of water, 64 pounds. So if you've got, you know, 5 feet of water, what, 320, whatever it is, pounds, you got all this weight. Well, that's pushing down and it's squeezing. If there's water underneath that liner and there's a hole, which there always is, always will be a hole, it pushes through and it makes a little squirt, and it's squirting that thing. And it's just every time it makes a wave, it's starting to move at those seams. Because liners, the way they build them, they put them like 6 foot liner. They put just these huge seams that keep going down, and those just fail. They're going to fail. When they fail, then all the dirt underneath gets in and the entire water's dirty and the chlorine just eats up. You can't keep it sanitized and, you know, it's a loser.
So what do you have as a bottom? Just a straight concrete bottom? Because Wave Garden's concrete bottom, isn't it?
Yeah, we use the one in Palm Springs is pure concrete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the best way forward? Is just a pure concrete pour slab, more or less?
Realistically, that's the way to do it. The forces are just too great and too much, call it dynamic loads, that there's no other, call it in terms of cost and performance, that's the most logical way to do it.
I guess I always just assumed that everybody's pouring slabs below these things, but they're not, you're telling me.
When you say pouring slabs for the...
I just assumed they were all basically what I assume is a swimming pool, right? Like a poured concrete slab with something laid over top.
No, they tried to cheap out in the beginning, but now they're going to go back. They're going to be poor.
Was Waco originally? Was it originally a dirt bottom? Was it
originally Waco? Yeah. Was concrete on a very small part of it, and then they had liner. Then they went back in and replaced all the line, or not all of it.
So everybody dropped in Doughboys. Everybody went and straight Doughboyed. They thought, we want a sweet swimming pool. What's better than a swimming pool when you can pay half as much and get a Doughboy?
Exactly.
What's a Doughboy for Australian listeners?
Doughboy was what I had as a child, since my family could never afford a swimming pool, which is the portable pool you throw up in your backyard with the stands and the
it had it had the little steel trusses and the aluminum, and then you would flip the thing over and put the clamps around it, the whole bit.
Yep. Right? And it lasts 3 months if you're totally lucky and no one's doing a cannonball.
Yeah.
So Tom, originally you were saying that you were worried that someone was going to die in the Waco pool. Why was that? I don't think we get to that.
Well, number one, the filth in the water, the dirt, the garbage, you know, and you got to have some type of residual chlorine and some sanitizer, either bromine or chlorine, you know, because what happens is there's just too much of a propensity for it's been a commercial. I'm talking a commercial environment, not a home or a house or something if you want to do your own. But if you're a commercial and there's third parties that participate in the activity, you can't have it not have a residual sanitizer to be able to handle those pathogens and viruses and amoebas. And I mean, just keep going down the list, man. You're going to die. That's number one. And then secondly, probably even the dirt. I mean, come on, put your hand underwater. You couldn't even see your hand. How sick, sick, you know? No. That's not
exactly. How good was the dye? Did you let the lime green dye?
Oh, God. Tidy bowl blue? Come on. I don't get it.
You know? So back to the Yeppoon pool. So it has the, you know, it obviously takes a lot of real estate, and the plunger, I imagine, is quite expensive. What were the other pros and cons? Because it looks amazing, you know. They have five ledges.
Yeah, it does. You know, and there is a place for that. Don't get me wrong. I think they're in a one in the world type of deal in Dubai, maybe, I don't know. It could be insane just because it is so absurd. You know, I mean, look at that thing. How punk, what do they call it? Steampunk.
Steampunk. Perfect. It's pure steampunk. It's Mad Max Redux.
It is. It's built for Australia. Oh, it is so good. On the one hand,
it's perfect.
I love it. You know, on the other hand, I go, no.
So where, Derek, do you know where they've sold? Because they've sold a bunch of theoretical licenses, right?
I believe there's a theoretical license sold to a theoretical development on the Gold Coast.
but only in Australia. Nobody's theoretically bought.
Well, it's funny. I've got an Israeli friend who's been threatening to build one in Tel Aviv for a few years. And
a Yeppoon, a plunger?
Well, he has been speaking to the Yeppoon guys, and he's spoken with Kelly's people and so on. But for me, it seems like it's American Wave Machines or Wave Garden. I don't know why, or I don't know why anyone would go with anything else, because those things are proven. People like them. They might not be perfect, but people do like them, and they do work, and they're commercial.
But to Tom's point, I mean, the one time I served a flow rider, Tom, was in Dubai. And I really had to curse and scream at the operator to allow me to stand on my feet. He insisted that it was a bodyboard thing, and they didn't have the whatever. I did not sign the liability, apparently, or I think I did even. And they still, but yeah, I popped my feet and just got sucked right over the falls and smashed on the ground, just loving every second of it. But like a stinking plunger in Dubai. I'm sure you've been to, how much time have you done in Dubai? You've had to do a bunch of time in Dubai.
Yeah, I have. I actually put a double flow barrel in the Sheikh's palace.
It's epic. See, I mean, your Dubai stories would be a whole book.
Yeah, tell us about the Sheikh's double flow rider.
Well, he has this pad. It's got to be at least 10 acres. So, you know, it's right on the water. And in order to get in there, you go through this heavy security. And they've got the whole airport thing, everything. And so one of my guys, of course, you're not allowed to have your phone. Zip. You have your phone? Okay, well, here's what happened. One of my work guys, right? He goes in, he's got his phone, idiot. And of course, they grab him Luckily, he was an American citizen because, you know, here he the guys go, hey, we want to tell you what would happen if you weren't American. See those dog kennels over there? And they had these plastic dog kennels with screen. Of course, it's 120 out, right? He goes, look inside. And he goes over there. I kid you not. There were two guys inside these dog kennels. They were, you know, what, Bangladeshi guys or something like that. It was insane, you know, and here, so he had to leave that day, get out of the country like that. So anyway, that kind of shows you the status.
Very serious about security.
Yeah, very serious.
At least so, but how sick was his American citizen saved you from the hands of an Arab.
So anyway, but the wave itself was incredible. I mean, in the size, and there's one of the guys, Eric Silverman. He's one of the top riders. You know, he loves to go over there and fix that thing because they let him ride it for a day. You know, of course he's testing it, right? So
it's the only one in the world though at Baba Z's.
Is yeah,
compound
full private. Full just
that's epic.
And he only used it. He runs the water because it gets so hot. You don't want it to, you know. He runs the water. He just lets it run, and no one's riding it for months at a time. I mean, come on. Oh God.
How much does it cost to build a double flow rider in your palace?
That was over $4.5 million for me.
Oh, we could sell Derek. We could sell Beach Care for that right now.
Tom, did you sound like you got a bit of cash, Tom? I sold it for a fucking flow rider in Chess's backyard.
No, I go through money. I've gone through hundreds of millions. I don't care. To me, it's green energy, man. I just go, whoa, spend that money.
Hey, Tom, can you talk to me about the, when we were emailing back and forth, you wanted to talk about the environmental paradox of wave pools because you have the situation where you have a pool in a desert, sucking up tons of water evaporating, and being packaged as an eco device. So can you talk to me about the environmental paradox?
Yeah, it is true because wave pools are a full environmental disaster. I mean, I on its face, they're not to be. They shouldn't happen, you know, on the one hand. And a number of reasons. One is how much power they use. Like, you know, I put in these waves, you know, they're like 5 megawatts, you know, to get a really good wave, you know. Like the one in Palm Springs, not now, but when they do it, it's going to be huge, right?
How many megawatts did it take to send Marty McFly back to the future? Was it 5 megawatts?
I don't know. I don't know.
I think it was. I think it takes 5 megawatts to send a man into the future.
Well, there you go. See, so, I mean, the other thing is the concrete. Concrete, because to make concrete, you know, the lime and that whole process when they mix all the components, they have to heat it up to like 3,500 degrees. And that energy to heat that up is very costly. And so you got huge CO2 footprint for these pools, along with, as you point out, the water. But with that said, on the flip side, from a surfer, and the reason I'm doing this is those are just transient problems to be solved. It's not, you can't get caught up in a Luddite, you know, mindset. I mean, don't get on this. You got to look at the problem when we solve the problem. So for me, that's what we got to do. And I've got to, you know, I'm going to take my profits out of these new circles, assuming you never know if that's why I can't say, even though I firmly believe I got the best tech, you never know what's going to happen in the real world. You know, you could have the best of everything. Just look what happened to Sony and Beta and the VHS. Or, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of other examples, you know, where the tech might be better. But that doesn't matter. There's a million other factors that come into play. But assuming as I succeed, which I will, then what happens is I'm going to take that money and solve these other problems. I mean, I'm working on these other solutions for like hydrogen and hydrogen power as a vehicle to solve some of that energy stuff, and serves as a battery at the same time, you know, because hydrogen, you know, that bond, that covalence, you know, is so significant. you know, you can really, it is a really powerful vehicle to store energy. And I think that would be good. Photovoltaics are good.
Theoretically, Palm Springs has all wind power. Could you theoretically wind power a wave pool?
Absolutely. Yeah. Palm Springs is a perfect vehicle for probably solar there. It would be the best.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, these things take time. So you got to give it, you got to look at it over probably 20, 30 years, you know, and cause think of it this way that we got,
Shane Magnuson calling you.
Tom, the thing doesn't work. The thing's fucked. We're canceling everything. You're not making a damn sin.
I know. I did have some problems out there the other day, but we fixed. But you got to look at it in terms of every day. You know how much energy is coming out of the sun and hits our Earth? I mean, come
hundreds
on.
Hundreds of watts. Hundreds.
Just so many megawatts, man. We're not even touching the surface, you know, and that's just one source of power. I mean, come on, you know, and so we can solve all those problems. I kid you not. And that's what I'm going to help doing. I'm not necessarily going to be the guy, but you never know. I got my ideas.
I'm no scientist, but I feel if you got Kalani Robb on a treadmill out there every day, you could probably fire at least 6 waves a day on Kalani alone.
That guy just charges, absolutely charges.
You could run a little plow across his six pack back and forth to create the energy while he just sit up. So Tom, with the Palm Beach pool, you know, people have seen it in its sort of, I guess, proof of concept phase, is it? But it's going to be a lot. It's going to be demolished and rebuilt a lot bigger. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's it going to look like?
Well, what defined the shape was funny, the property line, the way the setbacks work, you know? So I had to tweak the alignments of the caissons to get it, but that also results in different energy, the energy transfers out into the pool. So it's going to be a really unique setup that allows it to do, you know, some pretty phenomenal wedges. I think that's what Shane's really into. So it should be a good one. I think we'll probably, you know, just to keep expectations in line, I think the wave height, you know, if I was to bet, see, because we're fighting a couple things. One, the shoaling in the way the refraction works right now, it's not ideal under that current pool topography, you know, the bathymetry. So we'll be able to tune that up. You know, we'd be getting another foot out of it. That's my goal, you know, maybe more. And then, but it'll be a lot longer way, you know, so we have that opportunity. So it should be a really good one.
And will it be a right firing from one side and left firing from the other side, or one session be all lefts, one session be all rights? How will it work?
It's going to be an A-frame. So you can backdoor it.
Ooh,
yeah, that'll be cool.
In this house, every door is a back door, Tom. But a beautiful blue water, warm water A-frame is pretty dreamy, yes?
Yeah, it'll be.
You're going to be headed straight back to the Sheikh's backyard with this new technology. Is what you're going to be doing is demolishing the double barrel flow rider for this right here.
That's the goal.
Have you had chat with Dubai yet?
Oh yeah,
for sure you have. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I have, and I've got a couple going in. One in Vegas, a big one in Vegas, you know, Phoenix, you know, a couple in California.
The new tech or the flow rider?
No, this is the new tech. I'm zero with flow rider, so everything's all surf pools.
You should gift Vegas, I feel, to the plunger. I feel you could put a hotel on top of that thing, on top of the plunger coming down, and there we go. It's like the stratosphere.
You'd be a giant lift too, could have glass around it, and people could stand in the plunger and go under with oxygen tanks.
You guys.
So does your tech resemble any current tech? What would be its closest kind of?
Well, it's it's just pneumatics and what we call caissons, which are
What's a caisson? You keep saying caisson, and other people say caisson. Yeah,
Shane Magnuson was talking caissons and bathymetry like he was an engineering major.
Yeah, no, hey, Shane is a natural. He is really good. I gotta hand it to him. But
I mean, you and stinking Shane Magnuson are going to change surfing for the foreseeable. A weird redhead kid of a Swedish skateboarder from Maui, and you. That's gotta feel pretty good.
No, it'll be good. We haven't even scratched the surface. You guys are going to be stoked. I feel pretty confident that over time, it's realistically we're probably 10 years out, but it'll be good. You know, I think the way it'll work is, first to answer your question about a caisson versus a chamber, versus what happens in pneumatic technology is you have a big box at the deep end of the pool that's connected to blowers. And these blowers just create either pressure, like in the American Wave Machine case, or for us, we do a combination of pressure and vacuum. And when you control, you basically suck up the water, you create a vacuum. Think of the rest of the pool pushes down, so it makes the water go up, right? And then, or pressure, it just pushes it down. And it's how you control that, call it stroke, internal to the caisson or the chamber, is what manifests in terms of an energy pulse out into the pool. It doesn't transfer the water. You can't get caught up in thinking that it's water going out there. It's just, because think of it this way. Nature abhors a vacuum, right? So you push down, that water starts to go out. So yeah, you're introducing water in the pool, but you stop and then it goes back. So that same water, it can't keep going. It's gotta go back up into the caisson. And so what happens then is it translates into a wave phenomena over about probably within 20 feet, you know, ballpark. And then what happens, it's just pure orbital motion of the water column, exactly the same as the ocean. Exactly. No difference.
Nature abhors a vacuum.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Vacuums are uncool. Vacuums are the straight white males of nature.
Yeah, I think I was going to say something else, but no, you're right. Gotta be
is close. It true?
Yeah.
But what about a black hole? Isn't a black hole a vacuum, essentially?
Well, let's think. You have
doesn't all of nature want to become a vacuum? Let's be honest.
No, I think, well, once we had the big boom, I don't think you're not going back.
So, okay.
So there's gonna be mass and protons and, you know, you might have it evenly distributed after infinity, you know,
potentially. Okay.
But we'll be that'll be a while off. We don't have to think about that one.
Okay.
It's beyond our event horizon.
Jesus Christ. Hey, Tom, has anyone told you look like Robert Duvall meets Doc from Back to the Future?
No. What?
You look so much like Robert Duvall from Apocalypse Now.
I mean, completely. He is an exact combination of Robert Duvall and Doc from Back to the Future. Hey, what got me onto the megawatts.
Did you guys ever remember what was the movie that had the surfing where the guys were in the helicopter going out in Vietnam?
Yeah, Apocalypse Now.
Okay.
That's you.
So, yeah. Okay.
Let's put a cowboy hat on for us.
Okay, Apocalypse Now, when Marlon Brando was describing, was it a snail or a slug or something on the edge of a razor?
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah, totally. I think it was a slug. I'm totally wrong, like I was with the Waco death count. But
that is clearly what defines insanity.
Yeah.
It was a good one. Such a classic movie.
I mean, such a fine film.
Who can name the book that Apocalypse Now is based on?
Oh, please. Are you kidding? Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness?
Boom. Wasn't it Lord Jim? Was Lord Jim another one of his books?
It was Heart of Darkness was the book. Lord Jim was the character. I'm sorry. Lord Jim was another. It was Heart of Darkness, though, was the book.
Yeah.
Lord Jim might have been another book. Yeah, Lord,
hey, Chase, were you a pure literary guy?
No. I'm just a sub-literate human being who just accidentally fell in love with reading way too late in life. And so that's why I can chew stuff out and think that I know because I'm so dumb. But yeah, I precisely don't know what I don't know, and that makes me an awesome genius.
Well, the other thing is you don't react normally to things. It's kind of like, I remember that one session you guys had where that guy hit you. What was his name? The guy from...
Ashton?
Yeah, Ashton. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was classic, man.
So funny.
And I got to tell you one other one that was good. Was your the letter you wrote, the comeback on with the WSL on the grumpy.
Yeah.
You know, that was so heartfelt. I could tell that was real. You weren't bullshitting. Yeah. That was so heartfelt.
Yeah.
It was a great essay.
My sticking heartfelt, though, when you realize that once I write that and I'm like, okay, that's what I really felt. And then you realize and see it in print how dumb you are. Like, it's such a shocker. Like, that's the way I really felt. I was like wiping the tears out of my eyes after posting it, going to bed feeling all good and reading it the next morning thinking, oh no. Oh no.
You feel like Sal Masekela after you gave his speech at the paddle out, and then like those matters, Rhonda Harper rips into the floor.
Yeah, I don't think Sal feels that way. I think Sal still feels like, oh man, these people coming to get me, right? Where I knew anyone coming to get me was deserved. Like I was there to be got. I felt something really bad, but that's really what I felt, Tom.
No, it was, you could tell you put yourself out there. So it was, you know, I respect that. That was good.
I try. I have real beliefs that are dumb and awful, but they're still mine.
Hey, Tom, there's one thing that I guess we don't talk about too much when it comes to Waffles. We talk about tech, we talk about the environmental aspect, but just the joy it does bring people. And it's funny because the best waves I've had in the last few years of my life have been at Kelly's Pool and in Melbourne. And those things give you so much fucking fun. So there must be something great about doing things that make people very, very happy.
Yeah, no, and I think a lot it has to do with that. That is like my motivator. You know, these things they allow you to have a vehicle to improve, because that's what surf pools and for my hope to be gift and goal would be, is that you can use them as a vehicle to get better so you can surf in the real world in a way. Although, with that said, I guarantee there's going to be a whole lifestyle that builds up around it, you know, and it'll be on its own. But on the other hand, I think it's so important for people to understand the real natural ways and that surfing can provide that vehicle to understand cause and effect on a global in consequence is important. You know, I think that's got to happen because the environmental situation we're in, we got to definitely change. And I'm going to hopefully use the surf pool as a vehicle, as an educational tool to let people know that there is this continuity of existence. And hey guys, if we don't take care of the world and we don't, you know, understand the ocean and how it's affects, and if you keep, you know, dumping all your garbage into the atmosphere, which goes out and makes all, you know, et cetera, to just keep going down the chain, you know, we're going to end up, it'll be disaster. So that is clearly one of my goals for sure. And I think if you can get people to understand joy, they're going to be so much more receptive to your message. And that's my, you know, part of the deal.
And a great thing too is parents can send their kids out. They don't have to worry about sharks or anything.
Yeah, but that, you know, you figure with the kids, because I had so many dads and moms come up with me, you know, when I was you know, they would say, you change my kid's life. Because a lot of kids don't learn by books, right? They learn by physically doing something. And the aspirational opportunity that exists in surfing, and you see one of your mentors, you know, or, you know, that just can, you want to look, you look up to them, you want to improve. Well, that process of improvement for kids in particular is, it helps them become better people. And parents, you know, they understand that, especially when they see their kid and they want to be motivated. They can use it as a, you know, carrot to allow that. No, that's all good. And that to me is important. I want to provide that.
What's it got to do with sharks?
You can also throw some sharks though in the Palm Springs pool. I'm happy to go there and really small, tight shorts, just smoking ciggies on the bank. Just being a bad example, just a shark in another way.
Okay.
Not in a dirty way.
Let me ask you this one. You guys have this whole shark thing. And is your whole purpose to try to scare people not to go in the water? Is that the real purpose?
Also, people click on shark stories, or they used to. They don't anymore.
they still do click on them. You just have to get them people back.
You know, when I was surfing in Guam, I was surfing a place called Boat Pass. And I was paddling back in. Well, first of all, I got to admit, I got finned, you know, in my leg. So here I'm paddling back out through the, you know, the Marina Harbor, right, to get to the other side. Sure enough, whammo, I just grabbed my leg. I had to go get 35 stitches in my.
You got shark nailed?
Yeah, I got.
Oh, you're a shark attack survivor.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
So, but luckily, it hit my bone. It didn't get the meat. It got the bone.
I'm going to start pushing this narrative out, whether you like it or not, of the reason that Tom builds pools is because he was a shark attack survivor.
Go ahead. You have my permission. You guys can say whatever you want.
Do you have a big scar on your leg?
Yeah. I do.
I mean, that's amazing.
Right on my shin. Check this out. Last summer, because I moved to I used to live at Winnipeg, so, you know, I was right on the beach there, but I moved to the shores. I got stung three times. Stingrays, yep.
Were you shuffling? You weren't shuffling.
I was. I kid you not, man. what can I say? You know? Anyway.
Is Shores a lovely place? Where's Shores?
La Jolla Shores? You know, it's just right where I surf is Scripps, which is, you know, what? I can walk to Blacks, you know, it's maybe, what, half a mile or something.
Wow, you're rich as fuck.
No.
It's great energy, Derek.
I blow through.
Have you been listening?
Giant dildos, private wave pools, hanging with sheiks.
It's pretty humorous, man. You figure, I'm sure you guys get all the time people contacting you and want to give you millions, right?
Yeah, all the time. We've had some
pretty regularly.
Yeah.
I turn down more of those offers a day than I know what to do with.
We tend to get offers where they say, we'll give you $5,000 to write a 70,000-word novel. It'll take you 2 years.
Derek and I are beautifully caught. Oh, my damn friend just told me, put spines on the shelf. That's the only thing that matters, is spines on the shelf. And I took his advice, and spines on the shelf. Yeah, I could be like Dostoevsky, a drunken gambler living off my wife.
Yeah, well, you figure beach grit though. You guys do for your e-mag. To me, you guys are the biggest by far in my world. I mean, I don't know in the real world, but
well, 10 times bigger than WSL.
In the real world, we are by far the biggest surf thing.
Yeah.
Which is like being the biggest, biggest mouse in a pygmy mouse colony. Hey, so Tom, how much does it cost to build one of your pools on your hunk of land if you're a rich man and you want to get a Tom Lochtefeld pool? And what would be the process?
Actually, I do have one going back in Connecticut right now. It's going to this rich guy's backyard.
Bullshit, really?
Yeah, I got one of my guys out there now, and the whole rest of the crew goes out there Monday. It'll open. It's in Connecticut. He's too
a rough geographical.
Just Connecticut.
A rough
Connecticut.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in Connecticut. And it's not a big wave pool. I mean, the things size wise, it's like Olympic pool, a little bit longer than Olympic pool, but it'll have a 5 foot wave.
Well, is he a surfer? Is
Palm Beach one?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a surfer. Yeah.
Was it?
I've got a couple other really wealthy guys that want to put it, and you think of it, they're going more and more that way because, you know, you could imagine, you know, you get real money, and you got to be really careful because people are out to get you, you know. So,
thinking Robert Duvall meets,
yeah,
not whatever. Are you charlataning them?
No, I just accommodate their needs.
What does it cost? What does it cost to build one of those nice little 5 footers in your backyard?
Probably on average, say it depends on soils condition, but ballpark, you know, between $8 to $10 million.
Oh,
that's pretty good.
Derek. Yeah.
And does that, so it's all set up and you've got your little computer and you can just get up in the morning, go on this, and away you go.
Left, right. You know, full on air sections. Yeah, no, it's good.
Jesus. Would you, Derek, do this if you could? If you had $10 million dropped in your lap and let's say a modest home, say inland suburban Sydney, you're leaving Bondi, right?
I would happily leave the beach and live at a wave pool. I worked from
like you're
there. I wouldn't care if I ever saw the ocean again.
Well, I figure we can make you $10 million. Right?
I'm sure we can.
But I mean, if that's what the Tom Lockefeller private pool costs.
Yeah.
I'll get you guys. I got to ask, of course. Don't get me wrong. But assuming the guys don't matter and you guys get freed up on your air travel, you get out to Connecticut too, man. You got to check it out.
Oh my God.
Nay, talking our fucking lingo.
I love Connecticut too.
We'd have to put a bag over your head from the airport though.
That's okay. I've worn bags proudly before.
Bring your dildo on a bag, mate. We'll be fine. Hey, Tom, we're often going out to advertisers. And when we spoke to Eric Logan, who's the CEO of the WSL, we asked him to give us an advertising spiel. And he gave us a really good advertising spiel because we're the voice of authenticity and we're the core of surfing. We're so much bigger than the WSL and we're so much bigger than everyone else. But you're obviously a salesman if you can sell wave pools to rich men in Connecticut. What would be your spiel if you're coming trying to sell beach grit to someone?
You don't have to sell me. I mean,
you're going to a rich man saying beach grit is. What would be the sales pitch for a master salesman?
Well, first, you look at your market. You know, I mean, you guys, it's all digital. That's number one. You're right at the demographic. That to me is probably the sweet spot. I mean, do you guys get an analytics for all the who your viewers are and how much money they got and all that stuff or no?
Yeah, we get all that. It's just, you know, it's sort of 25 to 45. Everyone's, you know, 50 grand plus, except for the commentators are on unemployed or in jail.
Well, it's those extremes. I understand, but still, you know, I mean, it seems to me that you guys are in this absolute sweet, although the downside is male. I would say is what, 90% male?
Not surprisingly, it's actually about 60-40. I was so surprised when
really?
Yeah, it's incredible.
That is
the women just don't comment.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They just think nasty shit.
Understand. By the way, Jin C, is she a woman?
She's a woman who's epic. Yeah. So Jin C is a PhD in history.
Oh, classic. Guys, I tell you, you attract, do you get a bunch of other
thinking
early
man, she's the thinking man sex symbol. Everyone's lovely. She wrote a story about a year ago how she bought a red bikini, and I think that's been occupying so many of our readers' thoughts ever since.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. No, that's classic. No, you guys are, I think you're just, you're hitting all the spots to me. Seems logical. I just don't know your world that well, though, you know?
Is Connecticut Man looking for a fun little side biz?
In tell me in what zone or what What type of biz?
Well, he got the Connecticut man. He's got his wave pool, but maybe he just wants to connect with the surfing community. Imagine if you owned Beach Grit, how happy you would be.
Just think.
I mean, that's a problem, though. You guys are Beach Grit.
We'll come and live with
you. You guys can't leave. What's that?
We'll be a couple of Yankees in Connecticut.
Oh, my goodness. Derek and I would be sold. My wife is standing right here and would be so happy to sell both me and Derek for anything she could get.
Was this televised?
Yeah, Connecticut with
televised.
Us.
What?
I've got three children and a son. Bring with me.
Yeah.
I feel like the Beverly Hillbillies are. We struck gold. We struck oil. Some Texas tea.
But then don't you guys, I mean, how much, to figure it this way, can't you guys be doing other businesses simultaneously or no?
Oh, we're not smart like you, Tom. We don't have multiple. Maybe Charlie has multiple degrees.
I have a linguistics degree, Tom. I have my master's in applied linguistics. Can you use that in wave creation?
I'm still trying to figure out that one.
With that linguistics, though, you figure, now it's all going with the computerized artificial intelligence and linguistics. That's where Google and those guys are going nuts right now, all that.
I think every journalist ends up working for Google. Every journalist I know is now working for Google.
Yeah.
Does that mean you have to?
I unplugged the earphones, Tom, and now my wife is listening in to your career advice for me, and I'm screwed. You just got me a Google job.
Hey, Tom, before you go, because I think Chad's taking off too, but 5 years from now, what's it going to look like? What's the wave pool landscape going to look like?
The projects take a really long time. That's the downside. I mean, I've had projects going now for 4 or 5 years. I mean, themselves, they're still going. The entitlement process is so huge because they're so big and there's so much money, but with that said, you're going to start seeing more and more pools. I mean, I have in my head, I got so many different ways to do it. And I'm just waiting to evolve the system, because you want to start out, you want to make it successful, you want to get the revenue, and in the step one, which we still do not have, is the revenue model. So you got to make the thing economically viable to support the capital, right? Otherwise, you're not going to get the money. And we got to have these things be hugely successful. And whether that, and who's going to prevail as far as the seller, the vendor of that, is going to be the one who you're going to see out there. I personally believe it's going to be me, but in Surflock, on the flip side, who knows what's going to happen. But the winner is going to be the one who's got the cash machine, and that can tick all the boxes and make it viable. Now, as I said, though, for me, if I get the money, I'm going to put it back into the solving all the problems that surf pools cause inherently. You got this dynamic, but you got to start somewhere, and the first one is you got to make the money. So that's it.
So you want to be the Elon Musk of wave pools. So Surflock is effectively Tesla.
I have a Tesla. I got an ass.
You do. You got a fucking house on the beach. Tesla, right, eh, mate?
Why don't you have a DeLorean?
I don't have.
Tom, if I come down and pick you up in a DeLorean, can I take you out on the town?
No. You got to have an electric car. Now, I was thinking about it. Would I get, because I used to have Porsches and Mercedes and all that, right? No, man. You got to go electric now. You got to. You look down. If I'm sitting here, I look down at a Lamborghini. Those guys that are driving those, Ferraris. No, man. They're on the lower level. That was classic. I was up against this souped up Mercedes, and I just slammed, and just he was left in the dirt. So anyway,
what Tesla do you have?
I have the Model S. What's that?
Do you have it with the pack that has insane speed or ludicrous?
Well, I'm gonna get. I ordered the truck with the triple motor.
Oh, the Robo truck.
Yeah.
You have what?
I'm going to get the truck.
Oh, my goodness.
No, that's classic.
How are you going to get a Cybertruck? You're going to have wave pools and Cybertrucks, and fuck, it's like peering into the future here.
It is. I don't want this podcast to end. I just want to stay here forever.
Nah, you figure it this way. What we got to do is we're in. I mean, look, I'm like what, almost 70, getting up there, you know. And what happens? Oh, I still surf, but I'm starting to see what age is about, and physically how the systems start to degrade, you know, which is interesting phenomena to kind of witness. And but with that said, I firmly believe that within your guys' lifetime, we will come up with a mechanism for epigenetic, call it revitalization, such that those people with money, they're not going to die. I mean, that's another thing that's going to happen soon. Pretty trippy, you know? So kind of you'll
me and Chaz are doomed and you're going to live forever.
They're going to both dead next year, I think, probably.
So you got to stay somewhat healthy. Don't kill yourself.
Hey, Thomas, been beautiful chatting with you. Thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, thank you, guys. And I promise you, I'm going to invite the Beach Grit Cruise gets to come out to one of my pools one of these days. You guys, we're going to have a party. You guys are going to come out. We'll be good.
I'll fucking drive with Charlie from LA to Connecticut. Fucking just,
oh my goodness. I will paddle down any river to get to you.
All right. Cool. All right, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thanks. Adios. Lord, he made a woman out of me. I used to tease Joe Henry. I guess he served me right. Wasn't long till he left me crying out in the night. Joe Henry had his say. He went and set me free. I'm here to tell everybody that the man made a woman out of me. Lord, he made a woman out of me. When I think back to that day so long ago, I get a little feeling on my mind.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.